Hello and welcome to the Ski Racing Podcast with me, Ed Drake. Ben Clark is here. Marcel is on holiday, no doubt, but we have been upgraded and joined by Mike Yannick, former Olympic World Cup superstar from the Canadian team. Mike, I was looking through some of your stats, obviously, to try and remind myself. There's only a couple of years difference between you and I in age, quite a bit in talent by the look of things. Third in World Champs in 2009, Val d'Isère Slalom, what a result that was. And then second in Beaver Creek, that was your best World Cup result back in 2006. Can you, obviously, you can remember who was on the podium, can you, I assume?
Yes. Yeah, no. Well, first, thanks for having me. This is, this is a lot of fun. Obviously, I like talking ski racing and shooting the shit. It was in 2006, Andre Mire was first. And, oh, now I'm going to, I think Felix. Yeah, Felix yeah. was third. And then on the podium at World Champs was Lizarroux. Was ahead of me, and then Pronger, Manfred Pronger, who put on an absolute clinic. And
yeah. Then mate, that hill though is nuts. That Fast de Belvard,
dude. Every time we went there, it's like a free fall. But it is cool once you feel on hills like that, when you can feel connected to the snow and actually like feel like you have control. It's kind of weird, but it's a lot of fun.
I think we'll take your word for it, eh, Ben?
Yes, because I don't think I've ever had control all the way down that hill. just get gravity, just throw me down it.
And then I did ski the downhill for the combined, I think, and I may have the record for furthest back. I was 10 seconds out. This is, I think, the year before I was doing the combined the year before World Championships, and I was 10 seconds out. And I started last or something. And normally you wouldn't get shown on TV, but I think Walkoffer had a rerun, and so he went, and then I went because you have to have the last racer. And so Everyone saw just an atrocious downhill down.
Like, I just like scariest. Night and day, side by side.
Oh my God! The next race, the next slalom was at Garmisch, and I walk up to inspection, morning inspection, just get a slow clap from the field of like,
so harsh. Yeah, I intimidating watch like Valkoffer pushing out of the gate on the Fast de Belvard piece, going, all right, so that's how you do it, is it?
Yeah. That's how you do it. That's not how I'm gonna do it.
I also saw you guys were both did the super combined Whistler as well. We just had a quick check before you joined Mike to make sure that you
Ben, your internet there cut out, mate, but I think you were just making sure Mike realised that he beat me in that as well, yeah?
100%, yeah.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, keeping me well grounded. Thanks, bud.
That's a fun downhill, though. The Whistler one's a fun downhill.
It was so good there. The thing that I look back with disappointment in the fact that it was so warm.
Yeah.
Do you remember? I remember the downhill was 11 degrees in the finish area, and you're just like, yeah, not really.
Not the same vibes. Not the same vibes.
Yeah. But mate, and then what year did you retire?
So I retired in 2014 and after the Sochi Olympics.
Yeah.
And then one final World Cup. So it's been, gosh, almost a decade.
It goes faster, doesn't it? And then, so what have you been doing with yourself? Keep yourself busy. Obviously, you've been staying in the ski racing game, and now you've written your book. But yeah, how do you sort of get that transition from racing World Cup into civvy life?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I took a couple years off. I had some fun, or maybe a year and a half. I was skiing for fun. I did some ski touring trips, really shifted it up. But I was staying connected with the sport. I was traveling around Canada, working with some ski clubs here and there. And then I got a call from the ski club in Vancouver, Grouse Mountain. They said, hey, why don't you come out and see about being our program director? And it took a little convincing because I was enjoying my time out of a structured lifestyle that we were used to. But then once I got in there and saw, what a great club it was, small little mountain out of Vancouver. It's actually where my mom and grandfather or my mom started skiing, and my grandfather built the first double chairlift there back in like
proper history.
The '40s. Yeah. So it was cool to work there. And then I was there for 6 years, and then I just finished 2 years as the executive director with the Wissamount Ski Club.
Did you, did you know when you stopped racing, did you sort of go on, I just lost you there a second, but when you finished racing, that whole structure, and then you say you took a couple of years off, was that just doing the stuff that you kind of wish you'd been doing, like the ski touring, like the powder skiing and all that sort of stuff, like just giving yourself the opportunity to do all those bits?
Yeah, I would say my saying was I was doing nothing for as long as possible. But by doing nothing, I mean nothing structured and exactly going to have fun. I did a trip to Japan, ski touring trip in Whistler that I hadn't skied at since I was a kid in that same way. And yeah, I mean, I really try not to have any structure. Because you know how it is. It's just so regimented and
need to get your head out that game. And then did it take so it took you a couple of years to then find the sort of love to go back into coaching, with getting sort of dragged back in almost?
Yeah. And I mean, I always loved it, and I was thinking about it and, you know, watching it and talking to friends who were still in it. And so that bug's in there.
Yeah.
And it just took a little coaching to come back. And then once you start getting into it, you realize that it's just so cool to connect with the next generation and share, you know, not only share what we've learned along the way, but you learn actually in context when you work with younger age groups. Cause I could say certain things that a World Cup skier probably would get, but to connect that with a U14, a U12, it's a lot harder. So that was actually a really fun part of the journey, was to understand what we were doing at a deeper level and be able to communicate it.
Is that where the book came from then? Is that sort of like the startings of you deciding that you want to put some of the stuff down on paper? And
yeah, I mean, the book I think was building even from my career. I was journaling, and I was always super inspired by other athletes who shared their stories. And even from when I was in high school, I remember thinking like, oh, I think I might want to write a book one day, but you know, I was terrible at English and didn't know if that was possible. And then when I retired, I actually joined a writing group in Whistler and did stand-up comedy. Super amateur. Yeah. Super amateur stand-up comedy. And that really helped me to learn how to write and how to structure jokes, and listening to different, you know, comedians on how they do it. And so from there, I wrote some articles for some ski racing magazines. I was doing some stuff with FIS, and I remember thinking, okay, now's, you know, I'd like to write towards my last World Cup race, which was an absolutely incredible, like, you know, flow state, whatever you want to call it, in the zone, out of body experience. And it was just one of the kind of where I had been going and wanting to go for the last half of my career or last portion of my career. And so I wanted to share that. And yeah, in that period of kind of practicing, but then it fell to the wayside. I started working. And then when COVID hit, that's when I was like, okay, it's time to write. Yeah. And so it was a 3-year process between writing the manuscript to editing the design. And yeah, we just launched in the summer. And it's been super cool to share. It's called Go to the Start, Life as a World Cup Ski Racer. And yeah, it's just been fun to share not only, you know, my journey, but chronicle my generation of Canadian ski racers, my World Cup, you know, compatriots, and then just describe what it's like to race on some of the most iconic venues in the world.
Awesome. Mike, yeah, you mentioned there some of your teammates. Something that always comes across, certainly on the kind of European side of things, is it seems like the Canadian squads always have a really good like camaraderie between them, whether it's the tech team, the speed team. We're seeing it now with the women's tech team. They always seem to be a really great group who I guess the core people when you were racing that were part of that group that you were with.
Yeah, that's a really great point and I think what breeds that, and you see it, I mean, you may see it in the Americans as well, but the Americans and Canadians were forced to live on the road with each other way more than the Europeans. And not to say, like, obviously there's some wonderful killer teams there, but when you're traveling 6 months out of the year, 8 months out of the year with these people, you can forge a pretty strong bond. And during my time on the tech team, you had Ryan Semple, Paul Stutz, Pat Biggs, Brad Spence, Trev White, JP Waugh. But then the leader in that, who's 10 years my senior, was Thomas Grandy. And he made a conscious effort to bring us together. And obviously our coach, coaches, Dujon Grasic, who's there for years, Johnny Crichton, they were team focused for sure. Oh, I forgot Julian Cousineau, of course, who was, massive charge on the slalom team. But Thomas was the one who made us really think about how we were as a team. And, I write about it in the book. He came up with, or he got us to come up with like a mantra, a saying, and we called it the Kanaka, like the Haka, like the All Blacks have.
Oh, nice.
And just what it meant and what we were going to do, what energy we were going to bring. And so I think between being aware that we're on the road all the time, it forces us to connect. And you see, I mean, the men's speed team right now on the Canadian team, they're all friends. They all hang out, the tech squad. There's some really great characters. And then obviously the women's side right now. And I don't know, obviously, where that ventures in, but I think the fact that we have to live together, we're forced to be together, and so much of the year.
Yeah, because obviously, right at the start of the season, North America, and then it goes back to Europe, and it doesn't make any sense to go here, there, and everywhere for you guys, does it? So you were properly, really enclosed in that group. But then maybe like you say, that's where the importance, because obviously it's so easy to get caught up with the fact that it's an individual sport and you are looking out for yourself, but we talk about it here on the time and it's always talked about in commentary and any sort of sporting skiing zones or whatever. It's like how important a team is. Like, and if you're lonely on the tour, if you're having a crap time, you rely on your family, which is your team, to pull you up. And I think, again, pulling in the right direction, there's no point knocking your teammate down, even though the first person you want to beat is your teammate. But also, you know that if your team is struggling, if you and your team are struggling, then it does nobody any favors.
Yeah, I think you hit on the head there. And when you're sucking, it's lonely. And it's tough if you're the only one on the team who's sucking and everyone's having a good time and succeed and having success. But there's usually people out there that are within your team that are, in and around, and you're pushing each other in training. And I think that's where the camaraderie comes. When everyone's vibing, when everyone's clicking, and you can push each other in training, that's where the bonds are formed. And I mean, even you look at during my era, the men's speed team at the time, you had Eric Gay, the greatest Canadian ski racer of all time. Manny Osborne wins world championship medals, podiums. John Kachera, world champion. Jan Hudik, Robbie Dixon, and they were really different characters. Like, they didn't hang out necessarily off the hill, but there was a ton of respect and they pushed each other like hell in training. And so I think that element, when you know your teammates making you better, that really forges that.
And in terms of your best performances, sort of 2006, 2009, through those years, your sort of highlights, is that something, could you ever pinpoint what that was? Was it just like stars aligned? You just like, you're in that free flow state, whatever you want to call it. But could you ever pinpoint what that was?
Honestly, it's so I would think that I could, and then it disappears and you think you know it, and then all of a sudden you're struggling and you're like, yeah, man, why isn't it? They will say there is some element to stars aligning, at least for someone like me. I mean, you have those athletes who are like out of the stratosphere, you know, like the top end, and they're a different breed. And I listen to the, you know, interviews, whether it's Axel or Mikhail or Bodie or Ted, you know, and it's almost like a different language sometimes, yeah, that I'm learning. But for myself, you push, you work hard. And honestly, it felt when I switched in that 2006 season, I switched to Rossi and the skis just clicked. Like, it felt so different. I remember testing and I was against the other brands and I was 7/10 ahead on a 30-second course. And I was just like, holy shit, I can pick up the ski that early.
Yeah.
And you can let it release that, that early. So that plays into it. And then with Ted was on the slalom ski at that time and he helped develop the slant nose. And it was myself, Ted, and JB Grange. And I don't know if JB would feel the same, but I feel like Ted really pushed the development of that ski. And then we had that slant nose we on ice, and that was when they were injecting a ton. I just felt untouchable. Like, it was incredible. And then Ted left. When he left ahead, I felt like I was scrounging. I'm like, oh my God, how are we going to develop a ski? I didn't have the same mindset. And so I think equipment plays into it, but then you have to perform on that day. You know, the hunger, like, this is the early part of my career for sure. And I think 2011, I was still winning. I won a few World Cup runs and I was still feeling, I was skiing unreal that year, actually. And then I started to kind of dip off in 2012. But yeah, sometimes it feels like you can't ski out of the top 10. I mean, but I was only a couple podiums, right? And so I still didn't have
that consistency.
That consistency. So I don't know. I think, you put your best effort in. You need to be hungry. There is an element of game time performance, and like, you got to throw down.
Yeah.
Like, there's no question. But then when it comes down to it, you have a great support staff, you have great teammates, your equipment's clicking. Maybe you're on with other people that are helping design it in a better way. So,
And with your journaling and stuff, you've put that, some of that stuff into the book. Is it mostly, I mean, I remember talking to like the generation before our sort of generation, listening to some of the stories that those guys, the stuff they used to get up to, you know, before social media, before Facebook, they're like loads of crazy tales of like, of early camps and stuff before, you know, all of that side of thing. Or is it quite a serious racy side of book? What was your sort of your thought?
Yeah, I didn't, you know, all that fun stuff. There's only one journal entry in there, and it gets, you know, I touch on a lot of the inner journey as well, and dealing with the emotions and nerves. And, you know, I share my struggles with depression after the 2010 Olympics, you know, which was the height of my career supposedly, and then feeling super low. And so it's way more about that inner journey than that lighthearted fun stuff. Although I feel like during our time, it was transitioning.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved like the stories that we heard from beforehand. I mean, you have Cali Pallander, who probably is he has a book, but the stories that he has. But I think our era, we had some good nights. It was still there. Like, I think Felix, when he started coming out, him and Cali were super tight, and they were almost the like social coordinators for the circuit. And it's like, okay, what do we do? Like, I remember one inspection the morning of, like, Cal was sitting with Cali and Felix, and they're like, hey, we're going to Denver that night. And they're like, what's the party? What are we doing tonight?
That's what you want to hear. That's the sort of stuff you're like, I'm glad they're still grounded. You know, they're still like, you know, we're here to race, but then, you know, we're here to play hard as well as work hard.
The Finns, when my first came on the circuit, they had a place. This is, I guess it came even from the, Cali, but underneath the younger guys who are my age, you had not Sami Yutila, but Kaita, Yuka Rayala. Anyway, a few guys, they had a place in Innsbruck, and it's like trying to keep up to them was next level.
the Finns know how to drink, they enjoyed
their time, and I think they showed us, they showed us the way. But no, I mean, there was actually one story from Vengen, or I don't know if we're on video now, but one that doesn't make it in the book. So I have a cut on my nose, on the bridge of my nose, and it's from teeth. And that was after the world championship, bronze medal. So I end the chapter, and I'm sure you guys know John O'Brower, Australian racer, or Nye Generation, then the Baxters, Noel Allen, who were wild. And then Chris Branch, Butto. And so after the slalom, we went out for dinner. We're partying with the team. We had, you know, won the medal. And I called Jono and I said, Jono, you got to come party. Like, you know, we gotta go. And he goes, oh, mate. How's my Australian accent? He's like, mate. He's like, I think it was him, Noel, and Alan and Baxter. And they said, oh, we skied out first run, mate. We left town. I was like, oh, bummer. He's like, but then we checked the results and we saw that you won the medal. So we turned the car around and we'll be there shortly. And it was so they turned the car, wherever they made it to, I don't know, they're a couple hours away. They meet us at the bar and it's like, you know, we party like you won a world championship medal. And
you're right.
And so we're drinking pitchers of beer. Pretty much, and trying to keep up to an Australian, two Scotsmen, and some Canadians going to a bar. Anyway, at some point, I don't remember, and I wake up the next morning, and I go in the mirror, and I'm like, oh, where's my medal? Okay, it's beside me on my bed. And then I go to the bathroom, and I have blood coming down my my face, and I'm like. What the hell happened? So I'm cleaning up. I'm like, where's the blood coming from? I had this cut on my nose. And so I call my friend. I'm like, you don't remember? So apparently, at one point in the evening, a girl jumps on me with legs wrapped around my waist to dance. And I don't have the same balance I did earlier in the day. And I fall forward and basically pile drive her into the dance floor. I fall forward and her teeth, her two front teeth, go into the bridge of my nose, which I don't remember. And thank you for letting me share this. I've never told this publicly, only to some friends. And luckily she's okay. My friend stayed in contact with her and she was okay. And it was all a good laugh, but yeah, waking up the next morning and having blood on my face. And I'm like, what happened?
Mate, that's better than any tattoo. Yeah. That's better than any tattoo.
Right?
You can celebrate a world championships medal. That's the way to celebrate.
Keep an eye out for those boys
are
Scotsmen
wild.
And yeah.
Those boys are wild. Yeah. I've had not after winning world championship medals, and they've been good nights with those boys. So
we should check in with Dave and see if he's got any scars from carting cowbell around Adelboden.
No, Dave's far too sensible for that. He's far too sensible for that crowd. He's not being led astray. Yeah, well, also the bad thing is for Dave with his Kitzbühel results is that 2 days later you got Blimey Schladming anyway. So there's no way that you're gonna go and celebrate. Although to be fair, the Austrians, the Australians would have.
Exactly.
Yeah. But that's, you bring up a really good point about the schedule. And I was lucky. 1 year I really partied at the Londoner. So the Londoner is the famous bar in Kitzbühel that all the ski racers go. And it started almost with the Canadians going there during the crazy Canuck eras. And they let the ski, basically, if you're a ski racer, they'll let you bartend. And there's no rules in that bar. I mean, I roomed with Manny one time and he came back and I was racing the next day. I don't know why would they let us room together, or maybe he just broke into my room and because he couldn't get into his. My first time ever, I raced Kitzbühel once, but then I think a couple years later, I didn't get the spot myself, Paul Stutz and Ryan Semple. And Paul Stutz got the spot for Kitzbühel and Schladming. So Ryan and I, we just went up, we did the warm up, we did the inspection, and we were going to do the same for Schladming. And we were 22 at the time. And so we weren't going to, our coach is like, you're not going out. We got, still got Schladming to do, at least for Paul. And Ryan's like, man, screw that. We're going out. We're never going to get this chance again. If we're going to be good, you know, we're not going to go party after the World Cup and then have Schladming. So he made us go, and it was a Sunday night, and normally Sundays aren't that good. We get to the bar, Bodie was there, and so it started to pick up, and then all of a sudden they were like, hey, do you want to come behind the bar? So we had a proper, my one time having a proper Londoner night, with, you know, basically showering in beer. And it was, and to Paul Stutz's credit, he was racing and slamming and he did it as well.
Good for
so,
him.
And, nice. And thank God.
Canadian style, that is.
And thank God you have great teammates, like, to push you not only on the hill, but off the hill, because if it wasn't for Semple, we would not have done half the stuff we did. So yeah.
Right. You only live once. You know what I mean?
Amen. Good.
But then I think times might have changed. You know, that would have been straight all over social media. That would have been, you know, here, there, and everywhere, and God knows what.
Well, the one time in 2006, and my bet when I was, you know, I had the red leader bib that year. I was in the top 10, had my podium, and it was that year the downhill was canceled in Kitzbühel, and we had two slaloms. And so after the Sunday slalom, I think I was sixth or something in the first slalom, then DNF'd in the second. And I was, at the time, my girlfriend at the time came to visit me, and she raced in the Canadian team too, but they're on a different circuit. And so she said, oh, let's go. We want to go to the Londoner. I've never been to it. Let's go check it out. And her and Anna Goodman, who raced on the Canadian team as well, they were both there. And so we're like, okay, let's go. And we'll go see, have a beer. So we went, and we had we were there till like 11. I think I was home at 11:30. But in the midst of it, the owners were there, or the bar, you know, and they asked, hey, would I come behind the bar and take a picture? And so we came behind the bar. I like poured a couple drinks, you know, had a bottle of champagne, pretended like there was nothing in it, pretended to put it up and drink it, and then hopped back on the other side of the bar and went home. Literally the next day in the Kronenzeiten, or 2 days later before Schladming, which is the Kronenzeiten is the main Austrian paper, yeah, newspaper. There's a picture of me behind the bar, and it said something to, I have it framed at my house. It's because I thought it was so great, but it said something like, Janet goes out early in the course, but not early in the night. And I was like, I felt so shitty. I mean, I was so like embarrassed, and like, you know, I don't know why. And that was the only other time in my career when I got a slow clap coming up to the training courses in Schladming. And I remember one of the coaches, I think one of the German coaches, was like, hey, did you see the Kronenzeiten, huh? Good night the other night. I was like, son of a
Dude, that's not slow clap material. That should be well played material, that one.
High fives all around.
Exactly.
But mate, you know, I appreciate you coming on. Look forward to getting a shot reading the book, and yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm sure some of it I'll be able to resonate with, maybe the lows, but not the highs, but definitely the lows. I'm looking forward to reading it, because it's a mad world living on the tour and slogging your heart out to do something that you've dreamt about doing for your whole entire life, and would not many people get to do it, and even less people get to where you got to, and even less get to where we all dreamed of getting to. So yeah. I think it's one of those things where it's great that you took time and put it on paper and sharing it. So it's awesome.
Yeah, thanks. And I think we forget, like, when we live it, it's not a normal life. It's like you said, it's so, you know, living from out of a suitcase from hill to hill under the pressures, and obviously it becomes normal to us. But when you step outside of it, it's really cool, and to be able to share it, like you said, it's not only for people who haven't experienced it, but, you know, I had a teammate who wrote me, which was one of the most beautiful things, and he said, I felt really alone in my feelings of nerves and anxieties around my career, and he's like, reading your book, I realized that you felt those too, And he said, I feel less alone and feel better about my career. And I was like, geez, that was like the greatest review. Like, and you know, which was one of the goals, was to feel like, hey, we all experience these heightened nerves, these stresses, the deep lows, and we're all trying to be our best. So and I think anytime you try to touch the sun, you know, you can get burned, and if you can share it and feel like other people are doing it too, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, man. Well, go to the starts, available on Amazon. I assume it's, where else is it on your website?
Yeah, I mean, you can get it. I mean, if you want to support your local bookshops, I'm sure you can order it. I'm not sure in Europe how that works, but Amazon's probably the easiest.
But yeah, no, looking forward to reading it, mate. No, thanks for coming. But we got some racing to talk about. Got some more World Cup action. The women were over in Killington on what looked like an absolute bulletproof track over there. It looked absolutely sick. First day was giant slalom, and Lara Gutberami continued her winning ways, took the victory by a whopping point, 6-2 in front of Alice Robinson. Welcome back to the podium for the Kiwi. And Michaela Schifrin managing for the home crowd to get back on the podium, 0.81 back. Mike, let's go with you, bud. What did you make of Killington? What are your thoughts?
For me, it's hard in the GS. I mean, one, Alice is just such a great story, obviously, and continues. She skied really well, obviously, but that second run was generating some good speed. Canadian Val Grenier, solid result. Britt Richardson's first run, but I can't get over Lara Goot. Like, she's, you know, how much of a veteran, I'll say.
Yeah.
You know, at her age, to be performing the way she is, 10 years, is it 10 years after her? I'll have to shout out to my sister, forgive me that stat. 10 years after her last, or her from her first podium.
Yeah.
It's pretty mental. Like, I watch in awe. Like, it's such a cool storyline of her success in the latter part of her career. Well, throughout her career, but still having it at the end.
Like, both second runs, Ben, have been the calling card from the opening two GSs, where been a little bit under pressure, not bad first runs, obviously, but not obviously as good as she could, because the second runs in both have been absolutely smashing. She was third in the first run and then took the win by 0.62. It was mental.
Yeah, she is skiing so great right now. And
your internet just cut out.
And then has had that period of... Yeah, just saying the same as Mike, the fact that she had that great success early in her career and has then come back so strong in the last couple of seasons. And initially it was just the speed stuff, but now the GS is as well. She is absolutely flying, and you have to wonder where anyone else is going to be able to beat her the way she's skiing at the moment. It really was incredible. I know it was windy as all hell, and that played a part in some people's race, but it was like you said, bulletproof and so exciting to watch.
I was going to talk quickly about Schifrin, still not managed to win in giant slalom on that hill just yet. Getting there, still not vintage Schifrin in GS. And also, Mike, Grenier, like you talked about, I think she's been... I can't wait to see her best in two runs. I think we saw that twice last year, once with the DQ with false start or going before the beeps, and then obviously her win. On the Predictions League, I picked her both times to win, because I think she's a cracking skier, but I can't wait for her to, I don't know.
She carries speed so well. Like, I never, you know, and I'd say this with with the best intentions, like, she doesn't look crazy. Like, she's generating, you know, there's some athletes that they look like they're just generating a ton. I mean, Brignone, like, crazy active, but she just carries her speed and builds on her speed. And it's really solid. It's like, it's cool for me. I never was able to ski like that, and to watch that kind of position on the ski and just be able to have that touch to keep letting them run. It's almost like a speed skier mentality.
Yeah, it looks mad at the moment. Ben, go with your take on the overall with Godjia performing in giant slalom. She picked up ninth position. Expect to see a little bit more from Vlahova maybe after the podium in the opening round, down in 10th. And the Austrians had Scheib back in the top 10 as well, which was good for them.
Yeah, that Godjia piece is pretty exciting. we saw a glimpse of it in that first race where she had to go up and have a rerun when the course worker got in the way. But we said she looked pretty rapid. And again, I think she's found an area where she can get a lot more points. And if Shiffrin's not going to be as good as she has been historically in GS and not just racking up wins, Goggia might be seeing GS as a way to pick up quite a few points on that overall. And it'd be really interesting to see if she can do it, because it's been a long time since we've had someone really challenge Shiffrin, apart from the year where she missed half the season. And I think that's what the sport needs, as brilliant as it is when she's winning. You know, we say how exciting it is when someone pushes her each week. It'll be good if there's someone pushing her in the overall rather than another 1,000-point win that she seems to be able to get on a yearly basis. So yeah, if Goggia can pick up those points in GS, it could make for a great season.
Yeah, certainly. Well, and what's also good before we move on to the slalom is the fact that we've seen quite different podiums. Briannone and Vlahova on there with Goot last outing, this time Robinson, which is fantastic. She's back on a podium. Great stuff for her, as well as Shiffrin. And in some really solid conditions. It wasn't, I mean, yes, it was windy, like you say, Ben, but it wasn't a weather-affected race. I think the GS is shaping up to be wide open, apart from Goot. But if she keeps anywhere near that standard, it's going to be a runaway. Because, yes, 6/10 is a fairly decent marker, eh, Mike?
Yeah, it's so legit. It's super cool. But yeah, you see, as the season goes on, conditions change, people dial in their setup. You never know, but she looks in fine form.
Yeah, quick shout out, Kulturi and Liensberg are quickest on the second run. So Kulturi, her march towards the front is continuing. And once she starts with a little bit lower bib in GS and in slalom, all of a sudden that young lady might be a thorn in some of these elder statesmen's side as well.
I was just going to say Lucic as well. We talked about the first race. Yeah. That first run, 50 into 22. I mean, obviously set the fastest second run, but I was almost more impressed with the first run from coming that far back. Like she has got some tremendous potential. I mean, she's a couple of years older than Kulturi, but I really enjoy watching her ski at the moment. I can't wait to see what she's got in store for us in the coming weeks as well.
What were you going to add in there, Mike?
Yeah, I was just saying with Kulturi, it's her GS. She has some flair of like Brignone a little bit, and it seems like she is. I don't know if it's a little hunched over, a little more squatted, but definitely gets the tails out. It looks like a little more. And I feel like once her timing gets a little more dialed and those skis just pick up a little more clean, whether it's edge angle or, you know, what, when she'll be able to put it all together. But I found her, yeah, looking like Brignone and GS and then slalom. She almost had a flair of Lizaru, like just low hands, little, yeah.
Explosive stuff. No, it's mad. She's going to be a real, and on the comeback from injury last year as well. So it's not even like she's had a load of sort of miles under her feet over the last 12 months or whatever. So, yeah, pretty special. Anything to add on the GS, guys, before we move over onto slalom? Mike, well, actually, quickly, as we've got you here with your Canadian hat on, what do you think is going to be the unlocking to Grenier's season and the youngsters that are coming through?
Oh, great question. I'm sure the coaches are asking that too. I just going back on, on our success, and you look at, it's like when something clicks and what you build off of. And if she's just skiing into the top, well into the top 10 consistently, and then, that can build. And if the girls are beating her in training or getting close and they know it, it just takes some belief at that time, to turn into, I mean, Britt Richardson's first run, being able to translate that in the second run. So, yeah, hopefully that push, and with Val just consistently there, they get that good marker where they know where they can be.
We've talked about it before on other pods about, that getting that consistency and used to being in that top group, in that top seven, and consistency sort of in that seven to the podium, if you like, in that sort of 4 to 7. And then the difference in mindset before going, wanting that consistency to going, actually, I'm ready to chuck everything at it. I'm now not looking over my shoulder for WCSL points, for startlist points, and her ability to just, you know, dial it up, the fractions that make the difference between a no podium to a podium, right?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head there, where even at the top, I mean, it was always in the back of my mind. I was like, okay, I want to make points too. You know, you have to make a living. You have your contract. Like the first time I was third after the first run, and then I was like, didn't want to let it slip away. And so that just went off the top, and they're just going for it. So, and they're not worried about where they stack up. And you probably need to have that, which is, if they can make that switch, that'd be pretty cool.
And then on to the second day, which was slalom action, and the headlines have been written, haven't they? Michaela Schifrin's 90th World Cup win, which in itself is absolutely ridiculous. Took the victory on home snow to delight the fans. Vlahova skied well in second, 0.33 back, and it really was a two-horse race. Holdner was third, 1.37 Durr, who'd gone from second back to fourth, 1.5 seconds. One of the highlights has got to be Rossetti from Bib 32 into fifth with an absolute smashing second run. And the two Canadian ladies, Nulmeier and Saint-Germain, in 13th and 14th, respectively. Mike, what was your takeaway from slalom race?
It's so fun to watch. I love slalom, but one Schifrin push in the second run, that was to see her, you know, not just skiing within herself, but it looked like she was really having to charge. And down that last pitch, it did not look fun. I mean, the timing of, there's a lot of micro training there, and to be able to hit it properly is tough. And then, you know, obviously Wendy's second run was super strong. I felt bad, but it was a bummer for Sven Larsson. It, you know, after winning there and then coming back, and it just looked like she was, did not have the setup.
To be fair, she struggled, hasn't she? Levy wasn't great for her either. She's sort of, she'll be scrabbling around trying to find some training time to get that setup better.
Yeah, the feeling comes back of knowing what that's like. And
the dread.
So that was, you know, it's tough to see. Watching Schifrin push was super fun. I think was a really cool aspect to it, where she wasn't just like skiing down to ski down and took the win.
What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, that Schifrin second run. I honestly thought Vlahova had done enough that time. She put in such a monster run. I was like, Schifrin's going to have to really get this right to take the win. And did she? I know it was a pretty comfortable one. It was, after you said, 0.3 in the end, but there was only 0.05 between them on that second run. And it says something about the quality of the pair of them, that they can go down last and second to last or third to last, and easily put in the two fastest times of the whole second run. We've talked about them so many times. I love when they're battling like this. I'm glad Vlahova's got her mojo back after last season. And like you guys were saying with Sven Larsson, it's such a shame because she was flying last year, and it's so strange watching the same intent in her skiing, but the ski's just not responding at all or not picking up. And but, you know, you could certainly on our commentary hear the commentators trying to see what's going on with their skis to try and work out why they're not picking up and things like that. So it's heartbreaking to see. And we obviously had it a lot last year with the Austrians and Linsberger specifically. But and speaking of Linsberg, I thought she was looking pretty good on the first run. Obviously, she skied out, and she was my pick for last weekend, so didn't do me any favours. But I think her skiing showing signs of being back where it is. So we can probably lay off the Austrian bashing for a week or so.
Oh, we'll take the week off, shall we? I tend to agree. I don't think it was quite vintage Schifrin though, which I think is a little ominous, because I think, like you said, Mike, it looked like she had to turn it on, and she looked like she was trying. I think Schifrin at her best, it doesn't look like she's trying, and she crushes. I think she's still not, whether it's the ankle, who knows, but I still think that she's not quite got herself dialed in for this season, which I think actually may spell trouble for the rest of the women. But Vlahova, like you say, Ben, that mojo is certainly back, and I'm so pleased that she's able to yeah, to battle. And actually, her interview after the race, she was saying that, you know, she was happy with the result. And obviously, she was vocal. She said, look, you know, of course, I wanted to beat Michaela on home snow, but she just had the measure of me there. I thought I'd had a great run, and Shiffrin came out and beat me, and all credit to it. So, you know, from her side of things, sometimes she gets a bit of bad press in terms of how she maybe comes across and stuff. So I like that she, you know, was honest. And
yeah, and that's what we talk about. A lot of, you have to give so many interviews. I say you have to, these professional racers have to give so many interviews. And it's tough because it's very hard to let yourself come through because you don't want people, you know, saying things about you and making judgments on you. So a lot of what you get is very neutral. So it's really good when they are quite honest in the interviews and say what they're really feeling. But one thing I would say is there a more stressful woman to watch ski tech than Paula Moltzmann? She rides so far on the back of those skis. She's like basically the Goggia of tech. And she, like, yeah, we talk about how exciting Goggia is. Paula, when she's racing both GS and Slalom both days, you watch her and you just think, this is going to be absolute lightning. But if she gets this wrong by even a fraction, it's going very wrong very quickly.
Ben, you probably got somebody that was pretty similar to that in his own career. So I'm sure can relate to that feeling of being absolutely on the ragged edge. Because when she gets it right, that woman is seriously quick. But the mistakes are just mad at the moment for her.
I was listening to Bodhi on the podcast, and he talked about he didn't finish one slalom all year, but then he just kept pushing. And he's like, yeah, I would have never found the timing if I had slowed down to finish. And I think that's that mentality that I don't think I ever had. I probably as a kid, but not once I got to the World Cup. And you know, with Paula, like, if, you know, I think that's a part of the American mentality too. And if she can keep just pushing that and not slow up, not try to get the result, although she's, you know, still in the top 10, but to be on the podium and pushing for that every weekend, that's the only way.
Do you think her coaches will be telling her just more of the same, keep going, keep charging? Is that what they said to you? Is that sort of something that...
Well, that's what my coach has said for sure, whether I listened or not. it's probably pretty, you know, when a coach sees, I can't speak for everyone, but when they see a top end speed, you know, you want to try to build on that and keep that going. And it's usually that element of the athlete's hard on themselves or most, and they can feel down. But when you know that your top end is unreal, and you just can, yeah, you got to keep going into that space if you're going to learn how to get the timing of it.
Anything to add on that one, Benny boy?
No, man, that was fun. I want to, it's that time of year. We just want to see racing all the time now.
Well, thankfully, we're getting it going pretty quick. But before we move on to this weekend's action, just your comments, Mike, about Ali Nullmeyer and Laurent Saint-Germain, because those two, again, we spoke about it right at the beginning of the pod, like the sort of camaraderie, the team, and it's great that those two obviously are pushing each other. Saint-Germain's got the pressure now of being world champion and not necessarily performing every single run, but definitely looking like they are making their way back to the front and to the sharp end of things.
Yeah, I won that world championship win. Just unbelievable. And that's got to play on your coming into the year. I mean, like I said, some athletes, they're in a different stratosphere, but to see the results of her, you know, starting out the season, I'm sure there's some jitters in there of trying to relive that same speed. But you know, that race she was starting a bit from the back. She wasn't in the top seven. And so she's going to keep building back up. And with Allie there, you know, she had two top tens just out of the top 10 here. I think that's so great when you can have those two teammates pushing each other, but they'll need to find a gear for sure.
And what's the press happening? What are they saying about the the Canadian ski team, both men's and women's side of things, obviously excited for the season. Crawford, which we're going to see in action, and the rest of those downhill boys coming up this weekend, but obviously the successes that have been on the women's side as well. So what's the story back home?
Oh my gosh, thank you for thinking that we have press on Canadian ski racing amongst the country. No, we have our core crew. I mean, obviously it's excitement, and you know, we're I think for general in Canadian ski racing, and when it hits the mainstream, it's the big events or the big results. And when they had like last year's world championship was crazy. Cam Alexander, Jack, Saint Germain. And so that excitement, we don't see the dips the same way. Like if you're in Austria, they'd be probably grinding them for coming out of the top 10. We're in Canada where they're a lot gentler because they're not, the mainstream isn't following the same. And so you do have that allowance, I would say, especially coming into Tremblant this weekend. They'll be geared up and everyone will be stoked. And they remember the highs, let's say, in Canadian ski racing news, and they don't, you don't get beat up the same way. So hopefully that gives them some space where they can go through their process, find, you know, what works and then go after it.
Nice. Well, fingers crossed. And like we say, right, so on to this coming weekend of racing, and it is time for the men's speed team, hopefully, to get their skis on. And we're in Beaver Creek, and we are racing double downhill and super G. So training starts on Tuesday the 28th, all the way through until Thursday the 30th. So 3 days of downhill training on the Birds of Prey, and then two downhills. Downhill Friday, downhill Saturday, and then super G on Sunday. The women are, like Mike said, over in Tremblant, over in Quebec, and they race double giant slalom. Mate, Beaver Creek is one of my favorites to watch. I think it's got the speed, it's got the adrenaline, it's got the altitude, it's got the jumps, it's got everything there. I cannot wait to see this one go down. What are you expecting? What are you looking forward to seeing?
I love the jumps there, and that whole carousel, like, the speed they come off, that I forget the name of the main pitch, that whole section is unreal. I'm really looking for, I mean, obviously the Canadians, with Jack and Cam Alexander leading, but I'm stoked to see Brad Thompson come back to some form. He's had his podium there before, and so that's a big lookout for me.
What do you think, Ben?
It's going to be the Kilda show, right? Can anyone stop one half of the world skiing's most famous power couple? You know, Schifrin's done her bit, and is Kilda going to do his now? But no, in all seriousness, it feels like forever since we've seen a speed race, so let's kind of get it rocking. And can Kilda bring the same form he had last year? And is Odemak going to get that win that we're looking for from him in the downhills?
Mate, it's going to be that snow there is always really good. I used to love racing on that hill just because of the snow. The snow is like proper hero snow, like it's beautifully grippy, but it's so compact. So it usually holds up, and you're getting such great feedback from the skis. And it's going to be epic.
You talk about the altitude, watch out for the stumpage fees. So I don't know if you're aware of the term that was passed down to us from the previous generation.
Yeah.
When your legs turn to, or so full of lactic acid, they turn to stumps, and you have no more suspension left. And so when you get in that compression, what is it, off the, whatever the name, the jump into the compression turn.
Yeah.
That's when you see some good stumpage fees. And off the last jump, greatest crashes of all time, there was TJ Lanning. He just kept getting lower and lower coming into that last jump. And you could probably tell the altitude was having an effect on his legs. And he just sailed off right into the A-nets, skirted along. I thought he flew over, but I'm pretty sure I wonder if you could YouTube it. But it was one of the most epic. He went so high up it, up the A-net system. That's paying your stumpage fees.
Stumpage fees, right? We'll keep our eyes out, Ben, for the old stumpage this weekend. But yeah, because it's so high, and it's mega long as well. But the GS is when they used to race GS there. That is, you know, that is a mad lactic as well, isn't it? That one. But yeah, the downhill
too much. It's too much.
It is too much. What? When did they stop racing slalom? Because obviously your result was from there. Is that was it?
They would do it. I don't know when the last one was, but it would be every few years anyway. They didn't do it. You know, it wasn't an every year thing. So, yeah, but I can't remember the last time they ran it there.
Yeah, maybe they squeezed an extra couple in or something if they missed something early on. But I can't wait to see. But Ben, who are you going with? Who's your picks? What are you thinking?
I'm going to be going straight into picks. Yeah. I really want to see something special from some people. I'm not going to pick him because it will just go horribly wrong. But this will be the first time we get to see the test of Marco Schwartz saying he's going to do every single race on the men's tour this year. So I'm interested to see what his speed form's looking like. But realistically, if we're going straight to picks, I've got to go with someone who's going to rock. Seeing as we've got Mike on, I'm going to go James Crawford and just get a big Canadian in there straight away.
You're going to steal Mike's pick? Sure,
Mike can have any one of the other Canadians. It's fine.
So you're going to go with him for race one?
Yeah.
Right. It's not actually a bad shout because I remember him absolutely. He made some massive mistake there last year. Or was it the year before where he was absolutely on fire? I can't think. He's not. He was third in the first race of last year in downhill. So yeah, not a bad shout to be fair. I don't really want to go Crawford. I don't really want to go Kilder because I think it's just a bit. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, won't it? I kind of think that maybe we'll see a big weekend from the likes of Kriechmeier, who's looking to sort of start his season off well because he was going well in that GS, wasn't he? Before the race was cancelled, he found himself in the top inside the top 30 in Solden before we cancelled that race. So I think maybe that's not a bad shout. That's me for race. Race one, what do you think, Mike? You go for your pick for race one.
Kriechmeier is a great pick. But I'm going to stick Canadian, and I'm going to go Broderick Thompson back on the podium. Big, that's a, you know, I'm going for a big win here.
Because he was third, I'm just looking through the results here, third in 2001.
Yes.
Yeah, 2021. Yeah, 2001.
He had a good training run. You know, he had decent speed in the one training run in Zermatt. Maybe some magic.
Nice. All right, then you can kick us off with race two.
Well, I'll depart from the Canadians, sadly. but I'm going to go Kilday. I'll just do it. But I feel like he has some... Right. Some speed there.
I mean, his domination, looking back through the results here, Super G. So last season, he won the Super G and the downhill. The season before, he won the Super G and the downhill. So, yeah, he's done the double for the last
season. I think Axel gave him, like, the special Beaver Creek touch or something.
Yeah. The Norwegians have got that place on lock.
Yeah.
Absolutely do. So on that note, I'm going to go Swiss. I'm going to go Odermatt for race two.
I
think he's. I had him down for his downhill victory in Chavinia Zermatt. So I think maybe this time, with obviously that being a no show,
Go with an American.
Well,
Who have we got? Have they got any speed from the Americans at the moment? I mean, Travis and RCS have been a bit off the pace the last couple.
Well,
of
Travis,
years.
Really... Travis is retired now anyway, so you're basically down to Travis, RCS. Oh.
Is Goldberg still racing, Jared?
Yeah, I think he's there. And then they didn't. Who's come back? What's the guy that's made the comeback? So I'm going to get somebody. Somebody's going to slide into my DMs and let me know who that is.
Tell you who it is.
Yeah.
I might go Italian and see if Paris has still got some speed in the legs.
Nice.
I wonder what we're going to see from Cassay this year. That could be the.
He was the better of the Italians last year. And I was thinking that, but I feel like Beaver Creek's one of these places where that experience does pay off a bit more, and Paris has got an absolute bucket load of it.
It is one of those that's a little bit like Lake Louise in terms of you can not do anything wrong and be miles away and have no idea why, and that sort of experience that.
That's normally my picks. Thanks, guys.
Okay, right. Super G time. Mike, do you want to Would you want to take us away with the first pick for the Super G, or the only pick for the Super G? What do you think?
Then I'm going to go Jack Crawford.
You're going to go Crawford.
I'm going to go, I'll stick with the Canadians on the to bookend Kilde.
Okay, cool. All right, Ben?
I'll definitely have an Odomat for that one then, because I've got some weird picks for the other ones.
Okay. I might just go American. RCS for the Super
G. Yeah, nice.
You know, a little bit of, they will have had some decent time on there, no doubt, over the last few weeks. I know that they spent a lot of time up in Copper, but I'm sure they'll have had a little bit of extra. It's been pretty cold, hasn't it? So I think they'll have had some extra time. We saw from the Austrians in Gurgel, didn't we? How much home field advantage can play if you've got the time. So let's see if the Americans made the time to get themselves some extra track time over there.
Good pick. You're going to get so much love, so much American love.
You know, I've just given the fans what they want, you see.
Yeah.
can't pick Dave for the downhills and Super G.
I mean, I'd love to. I'd love to. Okay, and the women are over in Quebec in Tremblant for the first time ever. No World Cup ever before over that side of things. So they are racing double GS. Mike, do you know that hill? What are we in for? What's the inside scoop?
I've raced it once. It's nothing. Like, it's straight on. I mean, similar ish to Killington in the sense, like, you look up the hill, it's just right there.
Yeah.
But it's a lot wider. I think there's a lot less micro terrain. There's some good breakovers on the pitch. So, you know, look to, I think, who can keep their skis grounded over some of the breakovers, depending on how they set. But yeah, I mean, the prep, I've been trying to follow as much as I can, and the prep is going to be money. They got some good man-made snow. So it's nothing too crazy. I think there's two, if I can remember correctly, one, you know, two pretty good breakovers, and it's about carrying your speed onto the flats.
Okay. All right. Well, so somebody that's got a good touch on the skis, and that has got good technique. I wonder who that could be.
My pick. I'm going to pick the fastest person.
Yeah.
Is going to be the fastest.
That's good. All right. I'm looking forward to it. I think I like the fact that we've gone to someone new, especially just now that we've lost Blooming Late Louise, which was such a shame. What was the thoughts back home for that one, Mike, before we go on to these picks quickly?
Yeah, it's a bummer. I mean, it's such a, the people there that go love it, we love it, but the workers, the course workers, it's just a huge community that go out, do it every year. They're pretty sad, but hopefully they'll get it back. It's a really, it brings the sport, the ski racing community together out there. So
yeah, it's a shame, because obviously now we've got one on the women's side with obviously this coming weekend, but no race on the men's side in Canada at all this season. So it is a shame. And obviously we're trying to make this more of a global World Cup, as they keep talking about, trying to spread the love a little bit. Obviously we're going back to North America with Palisades Tahoe and Aspen for the women. Just looking through the women. Where's Aspen gone off the women's calendar? When's that? Oh, no, it's on the men's calendar. Sorry. Yeah, so the men are going back to Palisades Tahoe and Aspen again this year. But yeah, no. Canadian stock for the men's. I hope that's something that's going to change. Do you know if that's something that the Canadian ski team...
They want it back, but it's tough. I mean, there's so many angles at play, and obviously it comes down to money and who's paying for what. And then they got to invest, I don't know, $700,000 to $1 million for the snow prep. And if you're only guaranteed one race weekend, like before they would get, what, six races, men and women weekends? And they actually get some of the best TV viewers. The ratings are really, really good because it's prime time in Europe. And so when you lose, you know, you still have to do the same prep if you're running three races or six, one weekend or two. And so when you lose a weekend, it just doesn't become affordable. But, you know, it's,
Well, we'll see if how long Zermatt Cervinia lasts, especially at that time of the season. So, you know, they're taking
their pockets may be deeper. So,
well, yeah, maybe. Yeah, the Swiss aren't short of a few bob, and the Italians, I'm sure, can help them out here and there. But yeah, they like you say, they've taken the back-to-back race. They've taken four races, haven't they? So yeah, maybe we'll see. It'd be nice to go back. I mean, Lake Louise was wicked. I loved that place.
Yeah,
you know, we definitely
talked about it before. We just want to see some longer stretches in North America in general on the tour, because like, you know, it would give the other teams a chance to just experience that, you know, different snow for longer. It's one thing going over there for a weekend and racing on it, but you know, think how many legends of the sport have come, you know, from America and Canada as well. It feels wrong that we just kind of pop over for a weekend and then back in Europe for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and 2GS is
some great tracks there.
Yeah, it doesn't showcase as much. I guess, again, they're trying to keep the travel down. So if you're a slalom skier, on the women's side, you're not necessarily going to go. But there's not loads of people that are only one discipline, are they, in terms of GS? But
But they'll, you know what else? It'd be nicer if we did a longer North American stint is, you know, the Europeans could deal with being on the road a little longer.
Yeah, that's totally fair, man.
The amount of complaining, like they go over for whatever the 3 weeks and you hear the complaining and we'd be, you know, the Americans and us just be like, oh my gosh, stop it.
Yeah.
You don't know.
Shut it. Deal with
yeah.
it. No, it's really true. The thing is, we've spoken about it just quickly to be good to get your take on it. I think the problem is there's so many now sort of like iconic race weekends of resorts, and they happen at that time every year. And I think that's almost like the problem. Like Kitzbühel is always the same weekend. Wengen's always the same. Alta Badia, all of these, you know, Bormio, all of these places, Madonna, Schladming, whether it's on the women's side with, you know, Kranjska Gora, Courchevel, Samaritz or anything like that. They've got these weekends that are almost their weekends. And when you're trying to share the love a little bit, it makes it really difficult to, somebody's going to get pushed out to allow these, you know, the sport to be more global. It's difficult.
Yeah, it's not easy. When I was on the FIS Athlete Commission and I'd sit in on those calendaring meetings and, you know, and they talk about it, people would come and they'd only have maybe two or three open spots and how you get into the calendar. I mean, this was previously with Franco and now obviously with their new leadership at FIS, I'm sure it's shifting, but there's a lot at play. It's not easy, and it would take something revolutionary to take a major weekend away from, especially someone like, you know, move it around like a Kitzbühel or a Wengen or a Adelboden or Cortina, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, imagine it, like not only are you taking a race away, you're really taking away sort of a period in time as well as the location on you. So it's not just one fold. It's definitely more difficult, I think. But yeah. Thankfully not our challenge, but I do think it'll change. But I don't know how they're going to find time to squeeze it all in and to make it a little bit more even. But we will see. Right, women's picks for double GS. Ben, who would you like to go for in race one?
I'm going to be super greedy and go straight for Gubarami to try and make back some of the ground I lost last week.
Oh, okay. Mike, do I need to ask you where your pick is?
No. Is there two? What?
Two, yeah, Grenier. Double.
Yeah. Grenier, have to. I mean, she's from Quebec.
All right, so you got your first one. Wait, let me get. So you're going Grenier. And so I'm going to go. Do you know what? Like, it's not even worth looking back at the results because, like I say, the podiums have been so different. Hector's starting to come back towards form. Robinson, I think she could be a little bit too up and down. She's going to go in super confident. I think she's going to push so hard that I can see that potentially not going the right way. Brunoni, Schifrin. Ooh. Do you know what? I think I'm going to go Schifrin. That's where I'm going to go for my first one. Mike, would you like to go first on the second?
So if I got Grenier in the first, I'll take Goot for the third win of the year on the second day, just because she's been so, you know, that hill isn't too wild, isn't too much, and you know, there's some similarities to the last couple of hills. So yeah,
so you're gonna go there. I think I'm going to go on the second race. I think I'm going to go for Sarah Hector. I think I just hope she doesn't try too hard because the results haven't quite gone the right way for her. And that's definitely been her downfall, I think, whether it's slalom or GS. It's just over pushing, but let's hope. Do you know what? If Grenier does a podium, and this is the first week I've not picked her, I'm going to be a little bit unhappy.
But Hector's she's a fan favorite. You know, people love cheering for her. So,
yeah,
you got a lot of support behind you again. You love the.
I'm all about the fans. Give the people what they want.
Yeah, that's true.
Go on then, Ben.
Right, I've been. I was discussing this at the weekend with someone who listens to the podcast, and they said that it can hear the pain in my voice that Tess is no longer on the World Cup tour. So we were having a chat about who my new favourite is going to be in GS, and I think the only person it can be is got to be Brignone, because we've talked about how much joy she brings to ski racing on a weekly basis. So I think after Gubrama gets me some points on the first day, Brignone's going to come in and be my pick pretty much for every GS the rest of the season.
Is that, all right, so we'll mark those in now. I'll make sure that Gareth puts those in.
Barring injury, those will be my auto picks for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and Marcel's picked Charlie Raposo in all races this weekend.
All races, excellent, good.
gents,
what a great way to put it, though.
Go on.
That Brignone brings joy into racing, and that's I never thought of it that way.
She's always got like seems to always ski with a smile on her face. Like some great pictures of the whole of the Italian team at the bottom when Rossetti did her result and stuff. Look, just
and she has such sendability too, which is like so fun to watch, right?
Just she goes full charge, doesn't she? Yeah. Not necessarily the prettiest styles of skiing, but flipping gets it done.
No pictures on the scorecard.
Well, that's very true. Yeah. Jens, anything to add about the weekend's racing?
No, mate. Let's get going. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Now that the preamble is finished, it is now time for the main event. Speed racing on the men's tour is back, and we are going to see some excellent action. I'm looking forward to it. Mike, thanks, bud, for joining. Look forward to getting a take on the book. Go to the start. And Ben, nice one.
As always, Mike, great chatting to you, man.
That was a pleasure.
Right. Bye for now, dudes. Yeah.